Hello, everyone, and welcome to Just a Position, the podcast where we explore mental health and vulnerability, featuring creators you know and love. And I'm so excited for this episode because this is someone who I have looked up to and respected for a long time, who makes absolutely amazing content. Matt Bernstein. Is it Bernstein or Bernstein?
Bernstein.
Okay, Matt Bernstein. I have a little official bio for you in case anyone who's watching doesn't know who Matt is. So Matt, who goes by he, they pronouns, is a creator confronting conservatism online through humor and logic. He began posting political content from his college dorm, noticing a rise in online homophobia after the 2016 election. Since then, his posts deconstructing conservative ideas of sexuality, gender, and masculinity have gone viral many times over. Matt has been profiled by MTV and worked with the Democratic National Convention during the 2020 election, interviewing gay Senator Tammy Baldwin to get out the vote. Matt's goal is to cut through the madness of social media to give people the language and understanding they need to argue against conservative bigotry. They want to help create a future where LGBTQIA plus kids can be themselves without struggle. Everyone, welcome Matt. Thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Hiram. This is my first official podcast. I don't entirely know what I'm doing, but I do know how to talk, so can't
hey,
be that hard.
That's all I ask of you. I'm super stoked to have you on because, you know, in the content creation space and with other people I've had on, I feel like they're just in a different category of content creation. I've never had anyone like you be featured on the podcast, let alone really be featured on my channel. And I can't even remember when I first discovered your post. It was a long time ago. And honestly, it was a while before I even put your face to the posts, because anyone who, you know, knows your content, it's like infographic style, text, color pop type posts that share a lot of like really insightful information. Do you want to explain like your posts a little bit and kind of the format and what you really want to inspire through your posts?
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to start by saying that a lot of people will call me an activist, which I rebuke.
Oh, okay.
I am not that. I just put my ideas out on social media. And yeah, like you said, I started doing it when I was in college, which I started college shortly after Trump was elected, and the uptick in outright homophobia online was just off the rails.
I remember.
And so I was kind of just bored in my dorm and thought, why don't I just start posting what I think about issues around LGBTQ identity and things like that. And since I've, you know, gone on to talk about a myriad of things, but the way that I do it is a lot of these conversations, there is so much to cut through online as far as false information,
yes,
sensationalism, bigotry, you know, bigotry masked as religion. And I try to cut through a lot of that with, you know, a personal opinion, obviously. But I try to cut through it and make it so that people can understand how to talk about these issues, about sexuality, about gender, about drag queens being in schools, in a way that isn't charged, in a way that isn't bigoted or, you know, like I said, like cloaked in religion, but just straightforward, truthful, and also hopefully liberating, especially to young queer kids.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you've done a really successful job with it. I mean, there's a reason why I see so many of my friends posting your content on their IG stories and your posts just blow up and go so viral, because the way that you talk about so many social issues is delivered so eloquently, I think, in a way that a lot of people don't really know how to decipher their thoughts and their emotions and their feelings about an issue, but you're able to really put it in such an insightful way, and also in a way, and I really appreciate this personally, in a way that really removes it from over emotion and from like a heightened emotional response. I think sometimes when it comes to, you know, social issues, of course we're passionate about them. You know, a lot of people are getting hurt. It's natural for people to feel, you know, really emotion driven, but in order to really speak to both or all sides of the conversation and appeal to people who may not be in the same frame of mind as us, I think the way that you deliver it is done so well in a like matter-of-factly, very straightforward, but very insightful way. And I'm really impressed. Every time I see one of your posts, I'm like, wow, I wish I could speak like that. I do not have that skill like you do. It's really, really cool.
Well, thank you. Really, it means so much. And, you know, one of the things I pride myself on taking things that are difficult to talk about, that are difficult to confront, that are often complex, that sometimes we don't know our own feelings about, and giving them, you know, the nuance and sometimes emotion and perspective that they deserve, mm-hmm. while also being clear, and giving people really the language that they need to, you know, hopefully someone could read my post and then they'll have the language that they need to, maybe they're young and go sit down at the family dinner table where their parents have, you know, spent all week watching Fox News and say, actually, I feel differently about this and here's why, and give them an argument to make that hopefully won't just come from a place of emotion, even though there's always emotion involved, but to say, hey, here's some logic, here's some facts, here is an argument that makes sense. And, you know, that's what I'm going to bring to the table. And sometimes people will say, you know, Matt makes things too simple. And yeah, there's always more to look into on any given issue. But I saw someone once write, you know, if people really want to learn about these things, they should go read a book. And they should get off Matt's Instagram and go read a book. And you're right. You should read a book if you want to learn more about an issue. But I don't know if you're aware, it's very hard to get people to read a book. So I want to serve as a jumping off point, nothing more, but a jumping off point for a lot of people to get into these issues and kind of combat conservatism.
Yeah. And I think that is so powerful, because where change can really happen is by having those difficult, those necessary conversations with people in our lives that we disagree with, being able to, you know, talk about that. And I think with your content, one of the reasons I really respect it as well is that it's really centralized on data and on, you know, like whether it be studies or research papers or polls or different things that really give the perspective and scope to a social issue that we need to identify, and separates it from any bigotry, any emotion, any, you know, swayed opinions or any agenda. I think that's one thing I really respect about yours, because I think it's equally as important to be empathetic and want to understand people, but also at the same time, looking at the data, looking at the research out there, being able to, you know, understand it. And I think your content breaks that down so well. And kind of with what you were talking about in regards to your content to be, you know, a starting point for people to be able to have those important conversations. You have previously in your post discussed the importance of talking to people who don't agree with you in order to avoid living in an echo chamber that, you know, limits your perspective and limits your viewpoint and ability to grow and, you know, continue to make change from there. So how do you recommend people seek out having conversations with opposing points of view? And like, what tips do you have, I'm curious on this, to remain calm, collected, and understanding in having those difficult conversations where we might want to blow the fuck up on someone else? I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say is that it's hard. And when it comes to, you know, both sides-ing things, as I call it, as many people call it, there is an extent to which we can do that and an extent to which it's valuable. And then there's a point where both sides-ing is no longer a useful or productive strategy. And what I mean by that is I like to spend a lot of my time on the internet engaging with content and content creators who, on a political level, I absolutely disagree with. And I do that because you can't argue against someone, you can't engage in a conversation with someone if you really don't fundamentally understand their viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So I can watch a 20-minute video from some YouTuber who I absolutely disagree with mm-hmm. every step of the way. But at least now, 20 minutes later, I know how they think. Mm-hmm. And so I know how to address that when I argue back in a post or in a debate or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I think that's so important. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, but you're good. But on the other side of that, there is a point where trying to both sides things goes too far. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have running through legislatures at every level in this country, homophobic and transphobic bills being passed through. Mm-hmm. And in the effort of being diplomatic, you have a lot of people, you know, going on the news or what have you, being like, well, let's entertain both sides. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hold on. But one side is religious people saying that they should have the right for the Bible to dictate how every single person in this country lives their lives, mm-hmm. regardless of their religious affiliation or lack thereof. And on the other side, you have some transgender teenager in Illinois who literally just wants medication mm-hmm. and to be left alone and called by the name that they've chosen for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I don't exactly care to entertain both sides of that, because ultimately, I want liberty and happiness for the trans teenager who's just trying to be left alone, and not for the religious fanatics who are trying to impose, you know, their methodology on the way everyone lives. Because obviously, that is not how this country operates, mm-hmm. and I don't believe that's how the world's supposed to operate. So mm-hmm. I don't fundamentally believe every situation should be approached with, let's entertain both sides equally. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's okay to have a point of view. And that's another thing that I try to emphasize, especially sometimes I'll meet people in person. And this happened recently to me last week. Someone said, you're like my news source. And I said, well, I hope I'm not.
Yeah.
Because I am not a news source. And I think it's really important to consider that nobody who you follow online who makes political content is a news source.
Yes. Yep.
We are commentary on the news. I'm very forthright about the fact that I have my own opinions that I'm injecting into the way that I bring information to the internet and to my audience. Mm-hmm. And I never want someone to think that I'm objective. I'm not, but I don't think I have to be. Mm-hmm. So
that's so well put. I'm really glad you addressed that, because like I have always firmly believed in diversifying your information sources, like getting information from as many, you know, credible and legitimate sources as possible, and then interpreting opinions, you know, beliefs, viewpoints from there. It's just good to soak up as much information as you can, because it helps you gain such a larger worldview. And when you were talking about, you know, wanting to understand both sides, I really do agree with pretty much everything you were saying, because in college, for example, I studied conflict resolution, and a critical part of, you know, conflict resolution and mediation is empathy. You have to take the time to understand the opposing person, what their argument is, but even beyond their argument, the way that they see the world, the way that they see other people, in order to really break down and understand why they have the position that they do. But at the same time, you need to have a bigger worldview and just overall perspective on the issue too, because solely going between two different, you know, fighting points essentially, doesn't always paint the whole picture of the issue. For example, in the USA, you know, with what's happening right now of, you know, what I would label as, you know, a lot of conservative extremism in policies happening right now, you know, in the government. If you look at the general political ideals, it is. I'm sorry. Like it really is.
It is conservative extremism. Let's call it that.
It is, because if you look at the rest of the world and the political standings of so many different political parties in other countries, it does, like, our system of conservatism versus liberalism does not even compare in the balance, but like that other countries have. Our conservatism is so ridiculously more extreme than so many other countries out there, and even our liberal ideologies that we have are more moderate in comparison to like a lot of other countries. And that's where I think it is good to like understand both sides, but also have a worldview to gain a reference as to whether one of the sides or both of the sides are just completely off base or out of touch with, you know, what the way that most people operate. I don't know if you agree.
No, I do agree. And a worldview is so important. And that's something that comes with time, mm-hmm. and that comes with reading, and that comes to being open to learning about things that don't directly affect you. Mm-hmm. But it's like when people in this country, like Democrats even, because I don't personally affiliate myself with either the Democrat or the Republican Me Party. Too, yeah. And a lot of people in this country would take that statement and think that I'm in the middle, but I'm to the left of the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. Because even Democrats, a lot of them are, you know, saying universal healthcare is so far off for this country, and they're probably right. Mm-hmm. But what's crazy is that it's, first of all, that's just what it is for so many other countries in the world. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, well, I think it's pretty wild. Anyway.
Even like what you were talking about with gaining a worldview and that experience and taking the time to read and learn, that's why I believe things like getting to know other people, getting to understand other cultures, taking time to learn about history and to read is such a critically important part of just growing up, becoming a human. Our education system really needs to emphasize that because it really does help you gain that worldview. And like I experienced that firsthand with the environment I grew up in, because I grew up on a cattle ranch in the middle of Arizona, like a town out in the middle of nowhere where it was, you know, unfortunately very homophobic, very close-minded, extremely religious, Christianity specifically, and, you know, mm-hmm. very, very racist, just, you know, checking off all the boxes of not an open-minded place. And for me, you know, the only way that I was able to, you know, not succumb to that frame of mind and get out of that thinking and be able to move past that was literally just by reading so many history books, learning about politics, learning about social issues, taking time to learn about other cultures. I think that's so important. And I want to like hear from you. What was your growing up environment like? How were you raised? What was the relationship with kind of this view on social issues you have now versus then? And also I'm curious, you know, with your personal journey of coming to terms with your homosexuality, like what that journey is like, honestly, yeah. Anything you feel comfortable sharing?
I mean, I grew up in a politically divided, like mm-hmm. right down the middle divided town in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a senior in high school for the 2016 election, and that was like hell on earth for the high school students, like kids running through the hallways yelling like "Make America Great Again."
Really?
I remember this kid like burned a pride flag on his Snapchat story. Oh my gosh. It was wild. But then on the other hand, you had like, you know, the theater kids, and I'm not talented enough to be in theater, but I wanted to be with the only gay people in the school. Uh-huh. So I actually signed up for stage crew.
I love that. That's awesome.
Just so I could make gay friends. But you know, I always grew up, you know, I'm Jewish, and mm-hmm. I culturally identify a lot with my Judaism, but, I remember from a very early age, my older brother one time in the car, he was just like, "I don't know if God is real." Mm. And looking back, that's like a really esoteric comment from a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. But that was the first time where it was like, it made so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. He was like, "I don't think God is real." And I was like, yeah, none of this actually makes any sense at all. God is definitely not real. And I would self-identify as like an atheist Jew. Mm.
What an interesting.
I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense for everyone's, you know, interpretation of religion, but it also mm-hmm. doesn't need to, because mm-hmm. religion is, you know, something that you make peace with on your own, and mm-hmm. your faith is something you make peace with on your own. And
exactly.
I want to make it clear too, in this vein, I'm not against religion. Mm-hmm. I'm not against Christians. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people will come up to me and they'll. Or in my comments, and I'll be like, "You hate Christianity," because obviously I talk about extreme Christianity yeah. in the U.S. But I'm not. And I have lots of followers who are Christians, who are LGBTQ Christians, mm-hmm. who cool. continue practicing their faith while being out as queer. And I think if you have reading comprehension, you, yes. you know, you can see a critique on extreme Christianity and know that it's not about you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, so, but yeah. And my coming out journey was interesting. I came out when I was 15.
Oh, okay.
Which was very young.
Yeah. Very young.
But I knew since I was like 10, I was like gay, like that's what this is. And so by the time I was 15, I felt like an old soul with it already. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, we gotta do this. But I had a lot of internalized homophobia.
Oh, and really interesting.
A lot. Like the pictures of me when I first came out, when I was like out as gay, but like mm-hmm. not like out as who I really am.
Yeah.
They're a little scary. It's a lot of button downs.
Oh, the trauma.
Which to me is, to me, it's the trauma. But, you know, my mom, who's my best friend, when I came out to her, I remember we were in her bathroom and I was just like, Mom, I like boys. I couldn't even say gay.
Aww.
I thought it was such a dirty word, but that was how I came out at the beginning. I said, I like mm-hmm. boys. And she said, you know, I don't care if you're gay. I don't care who you sleep with. Just don't dye your hair and like go to the parades and act crazy. That was literally what she told me. Don't dye your hair.
Oh, the scandal. I'm like calling up
Brad Mondo. I'm sorry. I can't dye my hair.
Oh my God. Literally Brad Mondo was the next guest on the podcast. Oh my God. That is a hilarious response. Completely opposite of what I would expect, you know?
Yeah. And she, it was reactions like that. And she never didn't love me, and we're best friends, mm-hmm. and we've come very far. I don't talk bad of my mother.
That's awesome.
But that was the mindset that I had going into coming out, which was, mm-hmm. you can be gay, but, you know, don't be, like, the stereotype that they show on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, don't make it your whole personality, is what they say.
I hate that statement, yeah.
I hate it, but I internalized that for like a while, mm-hmm. like years, and it was really not until I graduated high school, moved to New York, and started finding my voice online that I was like, maybe I can make this my whole personality.
And you make it a brand, you know? Even beyond that. I remember the first time I saw your post, I was like, who is this guy doing splits in like his Instagram post and has the most amazing, fabulous nails that I've ever seen in my life. You know, the whole argument around don't make it your whole personality and the stereotypes around being gay. It's really just all out of, you know, fear. It's that internalized fear of, you know, not wanting to associate because there's still so much shame around, you know, being gay. But it's also rooted in a lot of, you know, like judgment and negativity. You know, and I'm sure you've seen this, the problem with internalized homophobia within the gay community is rampant. You would think at this point with the gay community having come so far that it, you know, we kind of are over it. But surprise, surprise, being gay does not exclude you from being prejudiced, from bigotry, from racism, all these other issues, as, you know, many, many a gay have shown. And it's still a problem in the community that we need to address. Like, how did you get out of that mindset?
I think that is a great question and a great point. And it's worth noting that a lot of the people who leave me messages with heavy critique are LGBT conservatives who make the claim that I'm the reason, people like me are the reason we can't get accepted. Oh, and, you know, and things like that. And that is a really, really slippery slope. Mm-hmm. And something that I struggled with for a long time, because let's be honest, if you present like a cisgender, yes. heterosexual, very innocuous, mm-hmm. bootcut jeans kind of person walking through life, you will not get the same treatment as, you know, someone who is more flaming, someone who will get called slurs on the street, someone who is not cishet passing.
Yep.
If all you care about is liberation for yourself, then throwing everyone under the bus from the community, everyone that you think is more gay, more queer, more sissy than you, throwing them all under the bus to say, look, I'm one of the good ones. I'm one of the normal ones. Why can't they all just be like me? If all you want is liberation for yourself, that is a very effective way to get it. And my issue with that is that I don't only want, first of all, I am not cishet passing. So that one's kind of out the window for me.
I love
But also, I don't believe in only wanting liberation for yourself. Yes. It's all of us or none of us. And by the way, when they start drafting up laws that gay marriage isn't legal anymore, that consensual gay sex isn't legal anymore, that trans people can't get health care because it's a mental disorder, they aren't just applying that to the people they think are too freaky, too sissy, too queer, too flaming. They're applying it to all of us.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, you know, it's like that political meme of, you know, I voted for the leopard eating people's faces party, but I never thought they'd eat my face.
Oh, yes.
And that's how that's how I feel. You know, there are a group, if our listeners aren't familiar, there's a group called the Log Cabin Republicans, which are gay Republicans. That's just their name. That's their group affiliation. And recently, the Texas GOP said that they, in their like Texas Republican convention, they were not going to welcome the Log Cabin Republicans because they didn't want gay people there.
There you go.
And it's like, well, who would have thought? you know?
Wow.
Shocking. Yeah. You spend all of this time trying to throw the rest of the LGBTQ community under the bus for your own personal gain. But look at what happens. At the end, they discriminated against you too.
Yep.
And I think to circle back to the question you asked, which is how did I break out of that? I realized very early on something that I wish a lot of these people would realize, which is that no matter how hard you try to be normal, no matter how hard you try to fit in with the straight world, you will never be. And so, and also if you remotely care about people who are like you, the rest of the community, then you'll do the right thing and form solidarity with the community rather than solidarity with only yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So much of, I think, of that perspective when, you know, people in the gay community or just the queer community overall, you know, are saying, oh, I don't want to be like them. I don't want to fall into that stereotype. I've seen it, you know, as drastic as people, you know, verbatim saying that, but also in kind of like the intricacies of the gay community where it is valued to be more masculine presenting. It's valued, you know, to not be feminine and all these different little things. I think it covers a whole range. You know, a lot of that perspective, in my opinion, is just rooted in moral superiority. It's not about, you know, embracing or being a part of a community of love. It's about differentiating yourself to be liked by the majority when in reality, because of who you are, you'll never really be accepted. And it's really unfortunate that people kind of disillusion themselves with this thought of, you know, if I pander enough, then I will be accepted by the straight world, by, you know, the cis world, white world, whatever it may be. That people really, you know, fall into that trap because it is a mental trap. And the sad reality is that you will reach the end of your life having realized that you were never able to live authentically. You were never able to truly be yourself, to embrace, you know, your best elements, your weirdest elements, and live life to the fullest. And that's what makes me, you know, the most sad when I see people like that is like, wow, you know, you have the opportunity to be in such a loving community that has so much support and embraces so many people, yet you still choose to cling to prejudice and live miserably. And then you take out that misery on other, you know, marginally oppressed, you know, members of the gay community or just of the world in general. It trickles down into so many issues, which is why I think it's important to talk about it and why I'm really grateful that a lot of your content revolves around that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is, well, first I will say this with regards to, you know, masculinity in the gay world. Something that I often explain to, like, my cisgender straight girlfriends is masculinity among gay men is prized just as much as it is among straight men.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people outside of our community see our representation through things like Queer Eye, which are amazing, but they think that it's like the most celebrated a gay man can be is like being a well-known drag queen or something.
And yes,
that's the most celebrated thing you could be to me. But as far as gay dating, as far as, you know, getting people to have sex with you, the most prized and attractive thing to a lot of gay men is masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so naive when I was like, when I was first coming around to these conclusions, I was like 19. I was fresh in college. I was like just starting to get on Grindr. And that, and it was also the beginning of my nail journey.
Oh, really? Okay. And I love it.
Yes. And I would, you know, have my profile picture and I just had like my red nails or whatever I had. It was not this crazy at the time, but I got, with relative frequency, messages from guys going, you know, hey, I'm into you, whatever. And then we'd send each other pictures and they go, oh, not the nails, sorry. I remember I got one. I was walking to this guy's apartment. He gave me his address. We were going to hang out. I was walking to his apartment. I was so into him. And then as I'm walking there, he messages me, what's up with the nails?
Oh, boy.
And I said, nothing's up with the nails. What's up with your nails? And he was like, are they red like that right now? Because I had a big red nail thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, they are. They're always like this. And he goes, sorry, don't come.
Really?
Yeah, he told me not to come. I turned around. He said, nothing against you. I just don't like boys who think that they're girls.
Oh my God.
And that
God.
Was from a gay man.
But honestly, I'm not surprised at all. Grindr has... if you want to find the bottom of the barrel, worst behavior where people can just say the most terrible things out of complete anonymity or even not out of anonymity, go on Grindr because that app is rancid. It's like so many ways.
Which sucks because it's also the most popular thing that we have,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
It is the most popular tool for gay meeting, really. Mm-hmm. At least for gay men, which is wild. But anyway, I had a lot of exchanges that followed that kind of narrative. And at first I was so sweet. I would like try to explain through the Grindr app to these men, like explain them their way out of internalized homophobia. Like I thought I could christen them with the word of gay God. Like I was like ready to do the work. And then after a while, I was like, Matthew, you are draining yourself for feeble attempts at getting these men to understand their own toxic gay masculinity,
mm-hmm.
and it's not worth it. And so at a certain point, after not a very long time, I just said, you know what? Some people, the feminine presenting aspects of you are going to prevent a certain cohort of gay people from wanting to date you, wanting to hang out, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to date them anyway.
Yep,
and
yep.
it's better to just love yourself, as cheesy as that is. And like what you said, you know, a lot of these people, especially ones who lean conservative in their politics,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of them were probably, like a lot of us were, bullied in school mm-hmm. for being gay. They were probably called sissy. You know, they were probably called slurs.
Yep.
And instead of growing up and internalizing those truly shitty experiences to become compassionate, not only for themselves, but for the rest of the community, they found a part of themselves that they could cling to power with,
mm-hmm.
whether it's masculinity or money or whiteness yep. or education. And they said, instead of forming solidarity with the rest of the community who I share a lot of this trauma with, I am going to use the one part of me and try to cling to power and in turn do the bullying that I received throughout school and when I was young, and do it to the rest of the community, because that is how I will lift myself up. And what a miserable way to live. Like you said, you reach the end of your life and look back, and I can only imagine the feeling of emptiness when you realize that you spent all of your time and energy and emotion trying to chase after the love of, you know, a conservative population who will never fully embrace every part of who you are.
It's how heartbreaking.
How sad is that?
Like, it makes me so sad for them to, because, you know, I tend to look at my life a lot through, like, when I reach the end of my life, how will I look back on this moment? How will I look back on the way that I acted and the decisions that I made? And it's also how I, like, see a lot of other people too. And with the way that a lot of, like you said, gay men cling to whatever element of themselves or whatever, you know, feature they happen to have that makes them quote unquote better than other people. And then, you know, deflect that bullying and that ridicule that they either got from their parents, family, community, whatever it may be, onto other people. I think it, like, doesn't fully make sense to me as well. Like, the thing about, like, Grindr and stuff like that makes me so mad, and this is just about the gay community in general, whether it's on the apps or not. It's like, look, if you have those preferences, if you have those exclusions, you have that trauma, you know, that's underneath driving each of those things, whatever it may be, why can't you just shut up? Why can't you just not say anything? Like, if you're going to be acting like that, like acting like a shitty person and have, you know, whatever preferences, and, you know, why don't you just keep it to yourself? That's the thing that always confuses me about Grindr and these apps, where I'm just like, you could have literally said nothing. You could have literally just moved on, gone to a different conversation, not responded, but instead you feel the need to put other people down in this way and create such a toxic environment for the community overall. And that's me, and, you know, you as well, speaking as, you know, white gay men, it does not even compare to the amount of abuse that, you know, black gay men face, trans individuals face, or just people of any other culture. It's absolutely insane. It's abhorrent. And I don't understand why people can't just shut the fuck up and not say anything and move on. It doesn't make sense to me. I get so frustrated.
The takeaway here is everyone needs to shut the fuck up, but sadly, that is not what we here in the United States of America are good at doing ever. No. I mean, here we are in a podcast.
I know, right? We're ultimate loudmouths. it's what we do.
Can I flip the script and ask you about your coming out and growing up experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, so I found you, Hiram, through your skincare content, and, you know, you were, like, blowing up on the scene talking about CeraVe and drugstore moisturizers. And for the first time, I was like, wow, like, I don't need anything fancy. I could just, you know, get my stuff, a lot of it, from the drugstore. And that was a liberating thing to me. But I noticed you were following me, and I was like, holy shit, like, this is like the TikTok skincare guy. I felt very blessed. But through following you over a couple of years now, I have picked up through bits and pieces and mentions here and there through your content that you grew up Mormon. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously that you're gay, but, like, that's not something that you seem to talk about a whole lot in your content. And, you know, having built my content off of talking about politics and also talking about who I am as a queer person and what that means both as a personal issue and a political issue, I don't know what it's like to avoid that in my content. And I don't know if avoiding it is what you've done ever, but I am really curious what your experience has been, because candidly, my content attracts a certain type of person. If they agree with me, it attracts a different type of person if they disagree with me. But regardless, people are coming for the takes, the politics, the gay stuff. For you, you obviously, first of all, amassed an enormous following in a very, what to me felt like a short amount of time.
Thank you.
And it was also about skincare, which is theoretically something that people from all over the political spectrum mm-hmm. can converge on and consume. And so did you ever, I guess my point in bringing this up is, did you ever feel like you couldn't talk about it?
That's such a great question. I think it's, you know, it's really insightful. I'll kind of share what my personal journey has been, just shortly for anyone, you know, who's not aware. And it's funny because I don't necessarily avoid sharing the story. I think it's just every time I share my story, it always creates the most depressing mood in the room, and no one knows what to say, and they're all really uncomfortable and awkward, and they're just all saying like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, that's so awful. So usually I just avoid bringing it up for the sake of not bringing the mood down. But my own personal journey, yeah, I did grow up Mormon in an extremely religious environment. Like I said, small town, so there wasn't a lot of exposure to other people, other religions, other ideologies. And you know, my parents were in the leadership of the Mormon church, and you know, looking back on it, I obviously didn't know any different growing up early on. I thought, you know, the type of lifestyle that, you know, we had was normal. But as I get older and the more I look back, the more I realize that it wasn't even just a religious household. It was almost cult-like in a lot of ways, a lot of ways. I, you know, we'll watch documentaries about cults now and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like so many of those elements were present in my life. And I just had no idea because that's how extreme religion was. And, you know, I knew I was gay very early on and separated myself from the mentalities of my family and my community. I just never really agreed with any of either the political or social ideologies. I just never said anything for fear of being, you know, ridiculed. And it wasn't until I, you know, got to high school where I really, you know, at that point was like, okay, I am gay. And I know it, there's no avoiding it anymore, but I still feel, you know, a lot of shame surrounding it. When I was able to go to college, move to Hawaii, that was so liberating for me because that was the first moment where I was in an environment that was fully accepting of that. And then when I came out to my parents mid-college, they unfortunately, you know, disowned me for being gay under the guise of, you know, it was religious ideology. Religious ideology that was actually prejudice. And so it was very unfortunate that the relationship couldn't continue on, but it led me to build a really incredible family, a support system in my own life that, you know, really does love me and wants me to have the best life possible and do the best I can. So it has been a journey, and growing up in that religious of an environment was like absolutely insane. And I look back and shake my head and I'm just like, wow, that really was a fever dream, something insane. But to answer your question kind of around, well, what was your last question that you finished up with again? I'm trying to remember. You asked about my story and then you asked.
I think I'm curious, do you ever feel like you should shy away from talking about these things for the sake of not alienating a part of your audience?
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I'll be honest, at the beginning of my channel,
because surely, I mean, statistically, like, there has to be some population of Mormons who watch your yes. skincare reviews, right? Yes. So
yeah, and you know, a big conservative audience too. You know, there's like you said, cosmetics is kind of applicable to everyone across, you know, religions, genders, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, at the beginning of my channel, I was very nervous about bringing up anything that had to do, you know, with religion. I felt like my channel initially was really an escape for me where I could just be as goofy and as silly and as extra as I wanted. So because of that, I never really had an issue with, you know, just showing off the gayness and all of its glory in my early videos. I had a lot of fun with that, but I kind of avoided the more serious topics. One, because when I started my channel, I was kind of in the middle of going through a lot of them, like the disowning and like the, you know, picking up the pieces after not being able to, you know, have a relationship with my family. But you know, as I continued making content, and I think you understand this probably more than anyone, having seen the growth online and how many people were watching the content, I really felt a responsibility to try and integrate really important topics, world-changing topics, and things that can help people change the world and become better. I felt it was absolutely necessary to integrate it into my content, and that I honestly, as a content creator who had a large following, just had a duty to, you know, talk about these things, and that it wasn't about like if I felt uncomfortable, if I felt nervous or awkward bringing it up or worrying about how people were going to respond. That really didn't matter to me because I'm like, I know what it's like to grow up in an environment that actively hates people, where there were hate crimes, where homophobia was rampant, where racism was rampant. Even though I'm online and there's so many, you know, like there's so many incredible communities and so many open-minded people, and even though I'm in Hawaii where it's a very open-minded environment, that doesn't dismiss the reality that so many young gay kids, just like myself, are living through just the absolute torment and horror that I had to go through. And if I don't tell my story, then, you know, it's ignoring them. And I try to find a balance of like integrating into my content, but not talking about it so much, because I do unfortunately have to recognize that, like, you know, people come to my content to learn about skincare, and that's really what they want to learn about. But whenever I can, I try to integrate it in small ways. And then I had my mental health series and things like that, that I did as well. So if that answers your question, I don't feel scared of it anymore. If it pisses people off, so what? You know, I just try to think of it like if I was a young, you know, when I was a young gay kid, if I was able to watch someone online talk about their story in that way, which I was never able to, how much that would have changed my life. And I just try to remember that whenever I share my story online.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm familiar with your skincare content, obviously. We all are, but every now and then, especially when there's like, you know, a momentous decision that happens in this country or some reversal of rights or whatever, you know, which recently there have been many of those moments, but every now and then I'll see you like address either, you know, your past or just your views in general on like Instagram or TikTok. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, you know, I recognize my privilege in realizing that it's my privilege in a lot of ways, but one of which is that it's easy for me to say that, considering that my whole space that I've occupied online is based on my views. And so I never really have to be too afraid of sharing what I think about a given situation, because that's why people follow me. Obviously, that's not why people follow you chiefly. But I do really commend that you do that. And I really, you know, it's not your responsibility to. And I know you know this. You don't need a talk from me about using your platform. You know, your personal story and your journey and your views are yours. And for you to share as much or as little as you want to. On the other hand, I know that, especially I feel like I've seen a couple of your TikToks go viral where you are talking about your past and making it out of that and creating this new life of your own. And I really can only imagine, out of the millions of people who will see those videos, how many of them are touched by it, but who can also relate to at least a piece of your story, and who also feel like, you know, my past is so sad or tragic, or this is such a burden that I can't talk about it, but actually know that this is just something that unfortunately happened to you and people who are in similar positions to you. And this is just what it is. And talking about it is how we make it, you know, hopefully less common for the queer youth of tomorrow.
Exactly. Thank you so much for those kind words. Like, you know, there's so much power in a story. And, you know, for me, the thing that brings me a lot of joy looking back on when I have shared my story, when I've talked about my mental health journey, is seeing the amount of comments. So many. This is probably like one of the top comments I see is people who say, you know, I found you because of the skincare content, but I kept watching you because of when you talk about social issues, when you talk about mental health, your own personal journey. And to any like content creators out there, or not even content creators, just people out there, I think like that is really important to know, is just the power of sharing your story, the power of talking about important issues, you know, in whatever small way, trying to make just a positive difference can go so far beyond. And even for me, who was nervous, you know, at the beginning to delve into those topics and things like that, it's cool to see how positively people respond to that and how much it can make an impact. And that's why I love your content so much. I know for a fact how many lives it impacts just based off of how, you know, viral I see your posts go, which is absolutely incredible. And I think, you know, for you, I have so much respect because you really are spending so much of your time and energy and life talking about how to make the world a better place for, you know, other people as well as you and your own community. And I think that's really commendable. So thank you for the kind words. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was such a good conversation. And like I said before, you're such an eloquent speaker and you deliver, you know, your thoughts and your opinions and points so well. And honestly, it's an honor to have you on the podcast. I'm so honored to be, you know, the first podcast you can be on. I'm sure you'll be on many more after this. But where can people find you?
Thank you for taking my podcast virginity. Of course. I really do appreciate it. I was looking forward to this moment and I'm so grateful it could be with you.
Of course. Of course. Please tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Yeah. So just Instagram, Twitter, it's Matt XIV, like the Roman numeral 14. And if you're wondering, because I get that question a lot, what does it mean? I was 14 when I made the username. It's not that deep. Oh. I wish I could just change it to my name now, but we're too far gone.
All good. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on again. Thank you to everyone who has watched. Make sure you subscribe to the Just Position YouTube channel to see more videos in the future. And make sure you stream all the podcast episodes wherever you listen to your podcast. So Spotify, Apple, wherever you do. And this has been a production of Ramble at Cadence 13 Studio. New episodes every Thursday. Thank you so much, guys.